Hello and welcome to Talking Trading. I'm Caroline Stephen. It's great to have you join us. Today we peer into both the past and the future of share trading. When we swap an O for a G, we have Google goggles, and we also have the future of our markets. Louise Bedford joins us to peer into the next 50 years to see how our market world will change with the exponential development of technology. We also take a hike back to the 1700s with Chris Tate's historical account of the mania surrounding the South Sea bubble. Whether it's the past or the future, both experts make the point that markets never change because people stay the same. But first up, it is all about the bond market this week in our market wrap with economist and Sky Business News commentator Jonathan Barrett for the week ending the 12th of June. Jono, hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
Good morning, Caroline.
How did the equity markets close in New York?
Quite a volatile market, there's no doubt about it. The Dow was down 140 points. Gold did nothing, oil did nothing, and the US dollar was relatively stable. So it gives me a bit of a sense that perhaps there's more equity plays at the moment actually happening.
How do you think this will flow onto the Australian markets?
Look, I think the Aussie market will be relatively under pressure. That's the normal way. This week we've got some interesting data from the RBA minutes on Tuesday. We've got RBA Kent speaking as well. This is really interesting because we all feel that the market was quite dovish, but the data last week and the week before is suggesting more of a hawkish move. So we're going to be really focused on what the RBA has to say, particularly in its minutes on Tuesday, so perhaps we can get a little bit more of a lead of where we think equity markets will go.
Do you see any trends, any major trends at this stage, or you really are waiting for Tuesday?
No, I think there are developing trends, and I think one has to be really wary of what's happening out there. And I think we've all questioned it before, but what we've seen is a steady rise of household debt over some time. And more recently, this over the last couple of quarters, a contraction of corporate profits. So that has to tell us one thing, that households can't spend as much, and they're not because the corporates aren't making as much profit. So there has to be some form of adjustment starting to form. And I think when we're searching yield, we have to rethink what are the better yielding assets we can actually go into.
Okay, so what opportunities are you looking at this week?
Well, I guess when I look at it now, I'm thinking that I've got to search for more yield, more sustainable yield, given that there is more volatility in equity markets. Now, the equity markets haven't moved for a long time. They've been in a 200 to 300 range, 18,000 is historic highs, and we're back below that 18,000, 17,000, 500. So the market's not moving. Therefore, I think I've got to start to search for different types of assets for yield.
Such as?
Looking more at the corporate bond market. I think that's a flavour that we've always talked about, and I do a lot of investing in that market as well. And there's been some very good yield plays coming up where we're getting real rates of return of 7.5% and in some cases even 10%. So you've just got to check the security of the company to which you're investing in. But that to me represents more of a long-term structured play in your asset portfolio.
Jono Barrett, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Caroline. Have a good time.
Louise Bedford here. Want to gain a glimpse into the depraved, genius-like brain of Chris Tate? You need to register on the blog tab of tradinggain.com.au. Chris's blog is jam-packed with witty observations about the markets that you can use to trade like a machine.
We're so sophisticated as traders. We have the latest real-time data, charting packages and online feeds so we can gain an edge over others. But technology moves so fast and 50 years can pass in the blink of an eye. Let's peer into the crystal ball with amateur futurist Louise Bedford, who'll take her best stab at just how traders will trade in the future. Hello and welcome, Louise Bedford.
Hi, Caroline.
What do futurists say we're going to experience from a technology basis in the future?
One of the main things that the futurists have been saying, they've been talking about the singularity. Now, this is where, because our computing power is just absolutely incredible and it's going ahead on an exponential basis, they believe that there will be self-modifying computers with greater than human intelligence by the year 2040. So if you think about what that means, because they can self-modify, they can also self-correct and they can also direct their own programming. So this is going to be like really a glimpse into the future, and it's going to be within the majority of our lifetimes, which is just lovely. It's going to be something that is kicked off, they believe, by the people in Japan who are really craving, because they've got so many older people and their aging population is just really out of sight. These people are craving companionship and they're craving like a robot type of person to be able to help them. So that is one of the big drivers behind the singularity. The money that is pouring into this area, the unseen money from private enterprise is absolutely staggering.
How do futurists come up with this information?
Funnily enough, they're just like traders. They look back in time to find out what's been happening and they project into the future. So there's actually a law called Moore's Law, and that is that computer processing power doubles every 2 years.
Wow.
Now, I know. And if you think about your own home computer, I mean, who knew that we would need the computing power that we have now? I mean, really, on your own desktop, you have more computer power in that one computer than really almost any other time in our history. It's incredible to think that they actually sent men to the moon with all of the NASA technology, with less power than you actually have sitting on your desktop. It's staggering. And really, why not get a part of this for yourself? Why not be excited about the future and be optimistic about where this could lead to?
So what are some of these developments going to mean for share trading?
Look, when I started talking about this, Caroline, a few years ago, people laughed. The first presentation I gave on this topic, people actually laughed. But I have to just mention the word Google goggles or Google glasses. That is mobile charting. We are just one step away from being able to blink and put up a chart in front of our very eyes using technology. It's going to be lovely when that does happen. One of the things that I'm very excited about, one of the movements, is the thinking and then action movement. What's happening in the medical field is we're discovering that it's quite a finely tuned skill to be able to think, but then to be able to get a body part to move. But they're actually starting to distill that down so that prosthetics can move by people thinking. If you have a look at, there's a YouTube video clip through Microsoft of Steve Gleason. Have you heard of Steve Gleason?
Oh, I haven't.
Oh, look him up. It's fascinating. I actually just cried when I first saw this video clip. He's a former football player at the top of his game. Now, he got Lou Gehrig's disease, which is a situation that attacks the central nervous system. And unfortunately, it does often hit young men. It's also known as ALS. Now, he's a father. He's a husband. He's somebody used to peak performance, performing at the very top of his game. He's confined to a wheelchair. He can't move. He can only move his eyes. That is the last vestige of movement that he has. Now, with his eyes, what he can do is control a computer. So his eye movements flick across the screen. The screen actually records where he's looking, and he can type messages to his friends. The things that we're doing now, where technology will be seamlessly integrated into our lives, where people with a disability are going to be able to overcome their disability with the use of technology, where the aging population will be looked after by caring robots that have smiles on their faces, that can have conversations. This is where we're heading to with trading as well. We are, unfortunately, though, going to have a few bad side effects with this also.
What do you think they're going to be?
Brain overload is definitely a difficulty. You know, I have so many middle-aged friends leading their middle-aged lives, having their middle-aged crises. It's just unbelievable. A lot of this is because we've, I think, lost the ability to switch off. We are plugged in at all times. We don't have so much downtime. And frankly, from a neurological perspective, guys need more downtime than women. Their brain needs to go into resting state, and it does go into resting state even when they're watching TV.
Fire gazing.
That's it, fire gazing, exactly. Whereas women, we tend to be a little bit more hyper with that resting state from a neurological perspective. So by not being able to escape from technology, the difficulty can be that we do get burned out and overloaded, and we forget what nature looks like. And just to go outside and smell a rose can be therapy in itself.
I just want to go back to trading and the Google goggles, partly because I like saying Google goggles. But is it going to affect the amount of information that's out there for traders?
One of the things that is happening in the markets is high-frequency trading, where computers are actually pushing on and taking off trades and everything gets triggered. And that's why often in the US, when you hear a limit order has been filled, and then sometimes they'll shut the markets because there's all of these orders that get cascaded upon each other like a domino. And you can get like a self-fulfilling feedback loop. So computers can actually just hit the stop, hit the stop, hit the stop, and before you know it, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars have been wiped off in a nanosecond. So from a human perspective, though, I think the thing to do as traders is that we need to control the computers that we have at our disposal. So things like charting packages will become easier to use. Things that perhaps were difficult for us in the past, like backtesting and backtesting across a variety of variables and parameters, that will be able to be done much more simply and without a degree in computing and economics to be able to achieve the result. There'll be cross-checking and things that are, I guess, only in the realms of the statistician in previous years, available to the home trader. So there will be a lot more speed. I can tell you one thing, though, Caroline. The more markets change, the more they stay the same. Trends are made up of large groups of people all feeling the same way and all buying or all selling. That will not change. No matter what we have to help us trade, the markets will still behave because people are driving that market action.
Louise Bedford, thank you for your time. And now that we've gone forward in time, let's jump back to the 1700s and hear Chris Tate's fascinating account of the South Sea Bubble.
Did you know that if you looked up a list of the top 10 most influential physicists of all time, you would consistently find the name Isaac Newton, Neil, or at the very top of the list? In fact, if you actually look at any straw poll of the most influential scientists of all time, Newton is always in the top three. In fact, Newton is considered one of the most towering intellects of all time. Born in 1642, Newton's achievements included laying the basis for classical mechanics, contributing to the development of optics, formulating the laws of motion and gravity, and he shares with Gottfried Leibniz the dubious distinction of the invention of calculus, that branch of mathematics that has been tormenting high school students ever since. However, the intellect, Newton was human like the rest of us, and during the height of the South Sea Bubble, he was reputed to have said, "I can calculate the motion of heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." Interestingly, Newton was not only referring to the general mania that grips crowds, he was also speaking of himself. The latter part of Newton's life was spent living with his niece, Catherine Conduit, and she reported that during the South Sea Bubble he had lost some £20,000. But of this, however, he never much liked to hear of it. This is a staggering sum of money at the time, when you consider that the cost to build Nelson's flagship, HMS Victory, was only £63,000. The issue with modern traders is that they believe that they are seeing and doing everything for the first time. And this applies to their engagement in the market. This applies to their observation of bubbles. So in this respect, they're a little bit like teenagers who believe that they have discovered having sex in the back of the car, when it's actually been going on since Henry Ford made the mass market car affordable. And heaven forbid, their parents probably did the same thing and thought the same thing. This ignorance of the history of markets and those who've gone before reflects a deeper malaise among traders, since so few modern traders are actually students of the market. Being a student of the history of the market teaches you so much more about trading than the cloistered confines of the internet and talking heads on TV. And it is so much more meaningful than looking for the next magic super-duper indicator or responding to some idiot's infomercial. So if we go back to the South Sea bubble that Newton was caught in, this is not the first crash to have occurred. The first crash to have occurred will be a topic for a later discussion. But the South Sea bubble shares so many features with what we associate as being thoroughly modern that it deserves some investigation. The South Sea bubble revolved around the trading activities of the South Sea Company, which was founded in 1711, and it was created as a public-private partnership to consolidate and reduce the cost of national debt. Its main line of business, in fact its only line of business really, was slavery. The company was granted a monopoly to trade with South America, hence its name. At the time it was created, Britain was involved in the War of Spanish Succession and Spain controlled South America. When initially issued, the company's stock had a guaranteed interest rate of 6%, and it did sell well. But the subsequent peace treaty between Spain and Britain was less favourable than many had hoped for, in that it imposed an annual tax on imported slaves, and it only allowed the company to send one shipment each year for general trade. So it was quite a restrictive little business arrangement that the South Sea Company had got themselves into. The first voyage occurred in 1717, but was only moderately successful. Things began to change from that point on, though, because King George I became governor of the company in 1718. As you would expect, this created confidence in the enterprise. The yield, the rate of return from the stock, moved quickly towards 100%. You can see how this would be unsustainable in the real world. But you also see something deeper. You see the unhealthy relationship between government and business that has become part of what we consider the modern way of doing business. Having a member of the royal family involved in your company could be considered the ultimate form of lobbying and is certainly a match for any of the lobbying that a modern-day spiv would do. In 1720, there was an incredible boom in the South Sea stock as a result of the company's proposal, which was accepted by Parliament, to take over the management of the national debt. It should be remembered that at this time the functioning government treasuries was extremely unsophisticated, and at the time it depended upon things like lotteries to raise funds. So you have a very, very embryonic financial system. You have a very, very naive way of doing things. So the attraction of appointing an instrumentality like the South Sea Company to take this over for you was very, very attractive. And it wasn't long before bucket shops spruiking the shares were popping up everywhere, and investors, both large and small, were encouraged to borrow to buy shares. So margin lending and the problems that it brings, inside mania, is not a new thing. It is not something that was suddenly invented in the run-up to the tech reg of 2000. This sort of behaviour has been going on for millennia. So when you think you're doing something new or seeing something new, you're not actually doing so. However, by September of that year, the market had collapsed. And by December, South Sea shares were down to £124. They had been over £1,000. So they'd taken a staggering hit, and at the same time, they'd taken both government and other stock with them. So the panic that afflicted them spread like contagion throughout the market. As you would expect, many investors were ruined, and the House of Commons ordered an inquiry into how this had occurred. This showed that at least three ministers had accepted bribes and had speculated on the company's share ahead of information that they held. Many of the company's directors were disgraced. This is the sort of behaviour you would expect to see in New South Wales politicians. But New South Wales politicians were clearly not doing it first. The scandal brought Robert Walpole, who is generally considered to be the first modern British Prime Minister, to power. His platform was one of seeking out all those who had been responsible for the scandal, but in the end he only sacrificed a few of those involved to preserve the reputation of the government. The South Sea Company itself survived until 1853, having sold most of its rights to the Spanish government nearly a century earlier. The intriguing thing about the South Sea bubble is that it shares so many features with modern bubbles. The company never had a realistic expectation of making any money. In fact, there never seems, looking at the historical documentation, any intention of making money. It was set up effectively almost like a giant pump and dump scheme. Directors of the company tried to mix personal business with the business of the company. John Harley, who had been one of the directors of the company, attempted to ship personal goods on company ships. This has shades of Brian Quinn and Coles Myer, using company workmen for private business. The company had very, very close ties with politicians who spruiked the company and who sought to profit from it in a way that would make modern politicians very proud. The company itself, instead of undertaking its business, spent most of its time actually talking about share price. In much the same manner that internet companies did more than a decade ago. The intriguing thing about this is, to me, it highlights that there is nothing new. Everything repeats itself. So when you think you are seeing and doing something for the first time, many, many others have gone before you. And it is only in being a student of the market that you can actually understand this. When you actually start to get out and look at what went before you, do you understand that these things occurred? And this can best be summed up in the phrase that what has been will be again, what has been done will be done again, there is nothing new under the sun.
And that's all we have for you today, guys. Stay tuned next week to hear mentoree Kirsten Stolt on her trading journey. The highs, the lows, the frustrations and the wins, all wrapped up into one interview. I'm Caroline Stephen, and on behalf of the team, thanks for your company. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.